Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The Buffalo Bills announced details today for the return of the Blue and Red night practice that will be held at New Era Field on Friday, August 2nd at 6:15 p.m. Tickets for the event are complimentary and mobile only. Beginning tomorrow, Wednesday, July 10th at 9 a.m., fans can visit distribution locations to pick up a voucher that is redeemable for up to four mobile tickets. For more information, please visit buffalobills.com. Former Lions safety and Texans safety Glover Quinn has announced his retirement from the NFL after 10 seasons. Quinn earned a Pro Bowl bid and a second-team All-Pro selection in 2014 when he led the NFL in interceptions with seven. He started 156 of a possible 159 career games. Forward Kevin LeBanc signed a one-year contract with the San Jose Sharks yesterday worth $1 million. He had 17 goals, 39 assists for 56 points in 82 regular season games last year. The 2019 Wimbledon quarterfinals are taking place today. Simona Halep has reached the semifinal for the first time in 5 years with a comprehensive 7-6, 6-1 win over quarterfinalist Zhang Shuai. Serena Williams advanced to her 12th Wimbledon semifinal with a 6-4, 4-6, 6-3 victory over Alison Risquet. The 2019 Home Run Derby took place last night at Cleveland's Progressive Field, where Blue Jays' Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Mets' Pete Alonso duked it out in the final round. Alonso ultimately claimed the victory with 23 homers, just one more than Vlad Jr. had in the final round. The Home Run Derby saw 312 homers, the most ever, destroying the previous record of 221 home runs that was set last year. Guerrero hit 91 of those 312 home runs in his first home run derby, breaking the single derby home run record and as the youngest participant in the contest's history. Mm-hmm. Vlad Guerrero Jr. getting it done at the All-Star game.
But not taking home the trophy. They got to change the rules for that. Got to come up with some kind of point system where if you have the most home runs on aggregate, which he clearly did far and away, it wasn't even close, primarily because he had a couple of swing-offs with Jock Peterson from the Dodgers, so they were going back and forth round after round, and so he had more opportunities and more swings, but you're going to be pretty doggone tired after you've hit 70 home runs in the span of a half an hour. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I don't know how you...
They got to come up with a different way to give credit to the guy that took that many swings and hit that many home runs to kind of level things, knowing that guy's going to be gassed.
Right. I don't know. It's an interesting concept, just going up there and hitting dingers, you know? It's batting practice, basically.
This is America, and we hit dingers. That's what we do here.
I don't know what you do.
We don't have a bunting derby.
No, we don't. Which we got into in the first segment, the Korean baseball. They have a bunting derby instead of a home run derby. I get it. Okay. So my guy, Chris Brown, who has reached the upper echelon of the media center here at One Bills Drive, you have an intern working for you. That's why.
Oh, okay. I was wondering now where this newfound cachet was coming from.
An underling. I have no underlings, by the way. I'm a solo artist. I'm Murph's underling. I don't know. Nate Mendelsohn, who is said a contributing correspondent, he wrote an article that's really interesting, and we've talked a lot about the moving parts and the new pieces to the Buffalo Bills offense that are going to be fun to watch, fun to get to know, the big question marks and the angst that fans have about the team doing well all kind of center around that side of the ball because the defense has been so established over the last year and a half, 2 years, two seasons. So your Nate Mendelsohn wrote this article about five defensive playmakers that we can keep an eye on in this training camp and this preseason who may, emerge to the forefront as being kind of force to be reckoned with or contribute to the force that is the defense and has been a top five defense over the past season.
Yeah, and the idea of this was to try to steer past the obvious choices and maybe shed a little bit more light on some guys who could be taking an even larger step forward as playmakers in this defense. I think a lot of people look at Trey White and say, okay, that's a given. Micah Hyde, okay, that's a given. But beyond those obvious guys, you know, who are some other guys with that kind of playmaking ability that maybe Bills fans should pay attention to at camp?
Now, think about this, though, too, and you're right. I mean, the first name on the list, and I guess we'll just kind of go ahead and dive right into it, is Jordan Poyer. And it's interesting for me because, you know, Murph and I and you and me and whoever we have on here, we start talking about the defense. You talk about how good the secondary has been with Poyer and Hyde in the back end and Tre'Davious White at the corner. And then last year when they found guys like Taron Johnson and Levi Wallace, guys who kind of emerged, and the names are kind of off the – so there's nobody kind of flying under the radar on that side of the ball because they've been so productive. And that's – you start looking for guys like that, it's hard to name somebody who's, for me, under the radar because I know those guys so well. Yeah. And there's so much stability on that side
right.
of the ball.
And for me, even though, you know, I watch every game, I'm, you know, doing analysis right. and writing stories and all of this, it still surprised me to know and to see that Jordan Poyer had 100 tackles for this team last year.
Yeah.
I mean, and I know the way the Bills utilize their safeties, there are opportunities to make that many plays, but 100 tackles for a safety in an era where the box safety really isn't what the box safety used to be. You know, they really aren't that anymore.
Right.
You don't have Blaine Bishops running around making 110 tackles a year like he did for the Titans.
I mean, well, one role that the safeties play in the defense is, and here's the way it was, and I remember even back in the days, you know, in the last century when I played, there are different philosophies going around defenses. I remember Walt Corey told me, he goes, I would like to have four corners out there. And his thought behind it was you need to have guys who can do everything. So if you want to it's easier to disguise your coverages when you've got four guys back here who can lock up on man-to-man right. all over the field. And what it is now in the NFL, you've got your safeties, and what you need them to do is to be at least interchangeable, where your box safety can back out and play center field and vice versa. Your center fielder can come down in the box and make tackles like Jordan Poyer did. He had 100 tackles. So, and what they really do is teeter-totter back there and disguise things so the quarterback doesn't know what he's looking for. And for Jordan Poyer, that last year it meant a lot of times when he was in the box making tackles.
Right, and even Josh Allen this spring, and his quote is actually utilized in the article here that we put together, he called Hyde and Poyer the best safety tandem in the league. Now, you could probably find a better individual safety, maybe two or three or four in this league who are elite and maybe even better than maybe Jordan Poyer is on his own or even Micah Hyde is on his own. But as a tandem, those two guys, there aren't too many other pairings on the back end that are as effective as a duo as these two guys are. I mean, Aaron Rodgers commented on those two guys after the game last year, even though the Packers won that game in a shutout because the offense could do nothing. And our MSG viewers are actually watching Poyer's interception in that game. Rodgers, I read his transcript after that game to see what he thought of the Bills' defense, and he said, "Our offense was awful today." Mm-hmm. He goes, "We may have won 22-0, but we were god awful." And the only reason he felt that they won the game was because Buffalo's offense was worse.
Right.
And he was throwing bouquets to the Bills secondary because he said they disguise things so well. Bill Belichick, two seasons ago, went 2017, after seeing Poyer and Hyde work together just the first time in advance of the second meeting between the Patriots and Bills, said what those two guys do cannot be properly game planned for because, and we're talking about one of the best game planners this game has ever known.
Sure.
He said the reason why is because these guys technically, when they line up pre-snap, at the snap, are out of position in terms of where they should be based on the play call on purpose to screw up the quarterback's read.
Right.
And somehow they are still able to get in position when the ball is being delivered to thwart a play, you know, mess up a play's timing, make a play on the ball. And it's rooted in what you just talked about Walt Corey. Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer used to be cornerbacks.
Right. And that's the real crux of the issue is how versatile they are and how comfortable they are and how well they communicate together. I think it's amazing, too, that they came in together as free agents. Remember, you know, Sean McDermott brought them both in as free agents in that first offseason when he got here. And I think it's a testament to how well they came together so quickly to be able to work together so well and communicate so well and to trust each other so much to make that happen. And, you know, Bill Belichick, it's amazing, too, that they game plan for the Buffalo Bills defense on the fly during the game. You know, they get their eye. They've got however many dozen eyes you've got, particularly at a home game. You've probably got more than you do on road games. But they've got guys watching positions and watching the players on the field during the game, getting a feel for what they're doing against your team as the game is going on, and then they dissect it and talk about it and then try and formulate a game plan on the fly as they go forward. That's how fast this thing moves at high levels. And that's what Bill Belichick was alluding to when he's talking about, you know, you can't effectively game plan for him before the game because, A, you don't know what they're going to game plan against you that day, which is commonplace around the league. But, B, you got to watch after the snap and then figure out what coverage they were supposed to be playing when they were completely out of position at the snap and then extrapolate from what they were supposed to be playing as to what they saw your offense was going to do, and then what you're going to do against it.
And are they going to line up out of position the same way the next time,
right,
or in a different way?
That's right. At least you get an idea of where they were, you know, the defense they wanted to call against your offense in that situation, and you can kind of work from there. But then you got to have a guy like Brady, who when they're lined up in a different spot and rotating to that other defense that they were in that other play, you know, I mean, you get, you know, you can sit here and it's a whirlpool.
Yeah.
You know, you're caught in quicksand trying to figure that out, yep, on the fly and then getting ahead of it to the next play where you're going to try and call a play against it.
Yep.
It's, you know, that's the level of difficulty you're talking about and what safety can do to an offense that they play against. So when you're talking about a guy, a defensive playmaker who's making some things happen, I think Poyer, these safeties, you get an idea of what and how important they are when a quarterback drops back to pass, what he's looking at and how,
right,
these guys affect him.
Now, the next guy we put on the list is an unknown as a playmaker at the NFL level, but I think the expectations are still there for this guy to make a ton of plays, particularly in the offensive backfield.
Right.
In Ed Oliver.
Ed Oliver. And I think it comes down to this for me, Brownie. It's all about his ability to penetrate. When the ball is snapped, how quickly is he going to be standing in the backfield by himself,
right,
without an offensive lineman on him? Because he can do that kind of stuff. It's that kind of gap awareness and ability to explode is going to explode plays right in the backfield. We saw Kyatt Williams do it in,
yep,
his career, and that's what Ed Oliver supposedly is going to be able to do as a pro. But it's a big question mark.
Right. I just think the fit is so good in terms of where he's lining up as opposed to, you know, being a two-gap nose tackle at Houston to come in here and lining up on the outside shoulder of the guard. And, yeah, he's probably going to still face his share of double teams, but you can't just leave Star alone with one guy.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You can't go one-on-one with everybody across this front. So if you want to give Ed Oliver that attention, that's fine. But in the end, you got five linemen and a back and a tight end. You know, and double team everybody?
Right.
Like, who's running a pattern?
Right. The problem is, and here's a nod to Ed and why he was at times, I mean, you know, 12 months or 13 months before this last draft when he fell to the Bills at number 9, was it?
Yeah.
They thought he might go in the top 5 picks. Because he's so gifted. He was playing out of position. A completely different – you can say, wow, he's down interior lineman. But listen, he was playing on the nose in college because physically he could do that. because he was so much better than the guys around him on that roster, they needed a guy in there, and he could do that. They needed him on the field, and he could play completely out of position, playing techniques that he's not really physically gifted for. But because he was so athletic, he could do some things. That's why he wasn't in the top five of this draft. He was playing completely out of position, being asked to play a position that, you know, he just wasn't really gifted for. And that's why the guy has, you know, had such high expectations. And that's why there's a lot of people thinking, well, you know, he may be really good because you haven't seen him do that very much.
32 college games at nose tackle at 280 pounds.
Which you should play, you should weigh 330 pounds.
32 games.
Yeah.
53 tackles for loss in 32 games at nose tackle at 280 pounds.
All right.
So just try to extrapolate that and say now he's playing three technique, granted against much better talent. Probably we'll see a share of double teams, but I think it's relatively safe to say he's going to make some kind of an impact.
Yeah.
In the tackle for loss column, because he's just so low to the ground and so quick. I mean, you don't get hands on him at the snap, it might be over.
Right. So there's Jordan Poyer.
That's two of them.
Ed Oliver, first two guys on the list of five defensive playmakers to look for at Bills training camp. The third one is a guy, of course, a playmaker that should be at the top of this list for playmakers around the league, and that's Jerry Hughes.
Yeah.
Analytics people will tell you Jerry's an elite pass rusher. Now, certainly he didn't have that kind of year last year. It was a defense that didn't get into some third and longs and passing downs all that often. But Jerry Hughes was accepted as a really elite pass rusher.
And I think last year when he had seven sacks, it was somewhat of an adjustment year for him with the new quarterback rules. Because I even had a long conversation with him about this, and he said, we got to the point where – Coach Teerlink, their defensive line coach, and us as a group decided we're going to worry less about the sack and getting the quarterback to the ground and more about just getting the ball out.
Right.
And so if you look at what Jerry did a lot last year, there were a lot more swipes at the ball when he got in on the quarterback than he did about bringing the quarterback to the ground, because he was genuinely concerned about driving body weight into the quarterback as he took him to the ground. You know, they're trying to practice rolling as they're bringing a quarterback to the ground so they don't get flagged for driving him into the ground. You can't hit him below the knee. You can't touch him on the head. So the defensive line coaches, you know, Coach Teerlink, Coach Whitecotton, and these defensive linemen just, well, screw it. We're just going to go for the ball every time and just try to get the ball out and go from there. Unless the quarterback completely wraps it up with both arms, you know he's not going to throw it, and it's going to be hard to punch it out. Now take him to the ground, fine. But all other circumstances, just try to get the ball out. Now, I wonder if the tact and the approach is slightly different now that they have a feel for what those new rules are. But I think the thing that favors Jerry the most going into this season is you have a 100% healthy Trent Murphy coming off the other side. And you've got the aforementioned Ed Oliver hopefully collapsing the pocket so there's nowhere for a quarterback to step up to avoid an edge rusher like Jerry.
Well, here's another aspect of that, going for the strip rather than the sack. I think one of the things that if you're playing a total team game, which I think this group, offense and defense, try to do more than anybody else, they play complementary football. This is an offense that was struggling mightily last year. And I think this is a defense that knew they needed more turnovers rather than just third and longs.
Yeah, that was probably part of it.
They needed some turnovers. They needed to give their offense as many possessions as they could. It was an offense that struggled to get going. It's an offense that led the league in three and outs. They needed as many possessions as the defense could possibly give them. And I think, you know, and the MSG people are watching some highlights here about the Minnesota game where Jerry had the strip of Kirk Cousins, and they were trying to swipe at it. They knocked the ball loose in Houston and really had the game laying on the ground.
That was probably their best pass rush game of the year.
Yeah, they had the ball. They had the game itself laying on the ground and couldn't come up with that loose ball and win that game. That would have won that game had that ball stayed on the ground and the Bills come up with it. But they couldn't get it done, ended up losing that game on a field goal. So, you know, that I think that was part of the philosophy for Jerry Hughes of not getting sacks but trying to – you know, sacrifice the tackle rather than try and go for the big play and get the sack strip, because their offense needed as many possessions as they could possibly get. That could have been. I'm not saying it was, but I think that's one of the considerations when you're sitting around watching film saying, listen, guys, we got to get the ball back to these guys as much as we can. So maybe that was it. So you got Poyer, you got Ed Oliver, Jerry Hughes. I think the third one is one that may surprise some people, Taron Johnson.
Yeah, I think he had what was a very encouraging rookie season. I mean, he showed he could make an impact at the nickel corner position as a rookie. This is a guy that played more outside than inside. So to adapt to that role in this scheme, Steve, where they ask a ton of the slot guy
in run, pressure
in run
on
support,
yeah,
in blitz packages, there's a lot on the plate for the nickel corner in this defensive scheme. And I think Taron came through with flying colors every step of the way last season and did it with a bad wing.
This is
a guy that played with a torn labrum in his shoulder from week two on until it just became so bad that they had to shut him down for the last four games of the year last season.
Right. Yeah, I think he surprised a lot of people. And certainly, even if he didn't show up on the stat sheet in a lot of games, I think this is a coaching staff and a team that really gained a lot of confidence in him.
He was a gamer.
Right.
I mean, that's what he proved last year.
Right. He came on and played extremely well when the chips were down. I think he was an eye-opener, and yeah. I think that there's no question they're looking for big things and maybe a step forward for him.
Because the team came to him after he had the torn labrum in week one against the Ravens. They said, you know, do you want surgery? Do you want to shut it down? He said, give me the harness. I want to play.
Yeah, he wanted to play and played well. Played really well.
Sticking his shoulder in there. There were several times last season where he would dive in there and run support, make a tackle with that shoulder.
Yeah.
And then he would have to come off the field, get everything readjusted, miss a play or two, and then come back. He did that a half a dozen times last year.
Right. And I thought he really gained a lot of respect in that locker room for that. Oh. So rookie kid who came in, played well.
You're going to play hurt?
Played hurt.
As a rookie?
Gutted it out. I mean,
you want to talk about earning stripes.
That kid earned his stripes as a rookie last year at the slot corner.
And the last guy was Tremaine Edmonds.
Tremaine Edmonds is an obvious choice. I think, don't forget, this is a guy, and they think, well, he's got a lot to learn. He said, listen, the second half of the last year season for Tremaine Edmonds,
he took leaps and bounds.
He was defensive rookie of the year for the month of December
last
year. It wasn't just the Buffalo Bills saying, hey, trumpeting him as a guy. People around the league noticed a change in his game in the second half of last season all the way through the month of December. So I think that's an obvious choice, but, man, it's one that really holds water.
Yeah, and I think just by virtue of the fact that he has a firm grasp of this defense now and where everybody needs to line up and the checks that need to be made, it's going to allow his athletic ability to peak in games. And if he can peak athletically in this scheme, I mean, I feel bad for opposing quarterbacks that think they're going to drop it over him and underneath the safety for a deep middle strike. He's going to be picking it off and taking it the other way. This guy is a condor.
Yes, I was going to say that.
Our
listeners don't get a chance to like hang around the building, and we cross paths with Tremaine once in a while, and we say, and he's a great guy. He's a friendly. He's freakish. He is so long and so lean and so and he's you know he's broad.
He still hasn't even filled out yet.
He just turned 21.
Yeah,
and he is just an amazing, amazing physical specimen. He's not one of those big, heavy, thick guys. He looks like an NBA power forward. I mean, he's not quite that big, but that tall anyway. But it's how he's built.
It seems that long, though.
Yeah.
His wingspan's like 7 foot plus. Nuts.
He can shake your hand from the back of the plane. I mean, he is that – he's a big dude. And he's incredibly fast. He's got great top-end speed. He works extremely hard.
But you know that throw I'm talking about, that deep middle throw where a quarterback tries to drop it over the linebacker and underneath the safety.
That window gets really small.
Brady tried to throw it last year, and Edmonds tipped. He didn't quite have enough of a grip on it to pick it off, but he tipped it. And it reminded me of A.J. McCarron in training camp walking off the practice field with Peterman. And he's talking to him, and he's like, man, you can't make that throw if Edmonds is out there. He's too long.
Yeah.
That throw is off the table. If he's there at middle linebacker, you know, dropping into that zone. You can't make that throw because right. he's too dangerous. It's too high risk because he could pick it off and be coming the other way, because when he puts his hand in the air and jumps, he's at about 10 feet. I mean, he's at the basketball rim.
That's right. So there you go. Those are the five defensive playmakers. You can go online at BuffaloBills.com.
Every day, right up to training camp. We got a new one for
you. That's the countdown, and one of them is five Buffalo Bills playmakers to look for in training camp: Jordan Poyer, Ed Oliver, Jerry Hughes, Taron Johnson, and Tremaine Edmonds. We're going to take a break right here. We're going to go to the bottom of the hour. We'll take a call when we get back at the bottom of the hour. We also have What Have We Learned coming up, and also NFL True False. So stay with us. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Chris Brown. We've been talking about which team has the best chance to be a powder keg in 2019. We've been going back and forth, and most people think that 45% of you think it's the Browns, 28% say the Raiders, 15% say the Jets, 12% have somebody else in mind, and our caller on the line is Bob from Cheektowaga.
A different team in mind.
Yes, he's got a different team, one of the others in mind. Bob, you think that the Ravens are going to be a powder keg this season. Tell us why.
I do, because I think Suggs is gone, a big leader there. And they've lost a couple more defensive players, if I'm correct. It's almost like they're trying to rebuild their defense. And I don't know if Jackson's the guy, now that Flacco's gone, to just do it all on his own. You know what I'm saying? And I think they're going to have a struggle year. I just don't see the Ravens really. Cincinnati, who's not that talented either, is going to beat them out.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Ravens, they've made, and thanks for the call, Bob, I appreciate it. It's an interesting take because I don't know if it's going to be a powder keg or it's just not going to work. They're going to try and do something a little different than anybody has tried to do in a long time, and that's run the football predominantly in a league that wants to throw it a lot. They've got a quarterback that they're going to do it. Deshaun Watson is going to take a shot at it. He started
– Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson. Man, I cannot remember Lamar Jackson's name to save my life. Lamar Jackson started the bulk of the games last year, and they got some things done. I mean, they but that's why John Brown is not there. He's not big enough to be a blocking wide receiver, right. You know, that kind of thing. And they have made some changes. Suggs was a big change. Ozzie Newsome is no longer the general manager. I think they're in a little bit of a transition year going, trying to move into this philosophy. We'll see. It depends.
I don't know if it'll be a powder keg. I think there'll be heavy criticism. You know, if it doesn't work, they'll certainly get their share of criticism if it doesn't work from the fan base, from the media. But the Ravens, you know, they're one of those stable organizations. Even with the change at the top in Ozzie Newsome, his successor had long been in line, you know, to succeed him, and his name's escaping me. Eric DaCosta, I think is his name, has been in the front office with the Ravens for years. And turned down other GM jobs in the league, knowing he was going to be the heir apparent to Ozzie when Ozzie was done. So I think a lot of the same principles on how to build the team remain, but the quarterback position has been a seismic shift in philosophy in comparison to previous regimes and teams that they've put together over the years.
Now, Lamar Jackson can throw the football a little better than he gets credit for. I've seen him do. He's got a good arm.
Right.
He throws it accurately enough. But he's, you know, he's a rookie quarterback. I mean, he's got some things he's got to learn, no question. If he takes a step forward, it'll help everything exponentially. But there's no question that if they thought he was going to be able to do that, they would not be making this philosophical change.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of tips their hand as to what they think he's capable of.
I still think he's going to run a great deal, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know.
All right, let's hit it. NFL True False
brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. NFL True False number one. Today's NFL would have been perfect for Doug Flutie. True or false?
I think with the way it's going, yeah. You know, I think even back then when Flutie returned to the league, you know, here in Buffalo in the late 90s, it was very clear that he needed throwing lanes to capably deliver the football on a consistent basis. I think with as spread out as the game is now, I think the success that Flutie would have had would have led to more point production. Because if you remember, you know, the 98 and 99 teams that made the playoffs, they weren't lighting it up on the scoreboard. In 99 especially. I mean, they were winning games 13-10 with the number one defense in football. And, you know, we're watching highlights of the Jacksonville game. They won that game 17-16 on a last-second scramble by Flutie.
Right.
So, yes, he went to the Pro Bowl in 98, had success, was effective enough. I would say true, yes. This he would have been far more productive as a quarterback in today's NFL than he was then. I think his stats would have been more CFL-like, where he won, what, three MVPs in a row? Now, I'm not saying he'd win the league MVP in the NFL, but I think his production would have been far better, you know, in today's climate with as spread out as the game is now. That caters to a guy of his athleticism and playmaking ability.
It wasn't that the league, he couldn't have been, he wasn't successful at all in the league the way it was set up back then.
He had success.
It is, yeah, it is.
I think he would have had more now.
Right, exactly, you're right. But he was not a bad quarterback when he was here the first time. So I think, yeah, I think that is true. The league is different. And also it's more accepting of guys like him. Obviously the first pick of the draft, Kyler Murray, is his size, which is unbelievable to think about in that day and age of maybe that happening. I don't think it ever would have because everybody had to be a stand in the pocket quarterback. I think the way defenses have evolved and the way offenses have evolved, guys obviously can play at a smaller stature, and I think that does speak to his wheelhouse. He could do it. Yeah.
Is that a college photo that we have of him? I mean, he looks awfully young on the MSG screen there that I'm looking at
right
now.
Yeah, that's his Boston.
That's his
college
Heisman Trophy photo.
Or it might be the New Jersey Generals.
New Jersey Generals. Yeah, you might have it right there. You're right.
So, all right, so that's we both say that's true, that the league is more set up. Doug Flutie would be more successful, suited for success in today's NFL. Yeah. Now, NFL true, false, number one. NFL true, false, number two. Cam Newton and Christian McCaffrey, are the best running back duo in the National Football League. True or false?
I am going to unequivocally say false because Cam Newton doesn't run nearly as much as he used to, number one. Okay. Number two, he's coming off major shoulder surgery, so they're not going to have him run as much. And while McCaffrey's numbers will probably be off the charts this year, I am saying false. So now you're going to ask me, well, who do you like better? I like Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram a lot.
Yeah.
I would take Russell Wilson and Chris Carson over these two. Mm-hmm. Another team that runs the football a lot now in Seattle. I'm saying false. I mean, I think McCaffrey's a wonderful talent and a do-everything back. But Cam Newton's not running much anymore. That's just not going to happen coming off shoulder surgery.
I'll go more traditional. I like Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt in Cleveland. I think when Kareem Hunt comes back, if he does.
Well, we're talking quarterback, running back.
No, they said running back duo.
Oh.
It includes everybody.
Okay. I thought it had to be a quarterback and a running back.
Do you have a better one, two running backs? I think Chubb and the kid Kareem Hunt in Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, Hunt's suspended for half the year, but yeah. Right. You're saying.
But I like those two better. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think Cam Newton, I'd say false too. Cam Newton doesn't run it like he used to. I mean,
they won't ask him to.
He's tired
coming
of that,
off shoulder surgery.
That's tired. He's tired of that. So that's NFL true, false, number two. All right, NFL true, false, number three. I'm sorry, I chuckled there. Jets, the New York Jets, Robbie Anderson could be the best wide receiver in the National Football League. Let me just start.
What are we doing here?
That is false. And I'll tell you why. I'm not saying that
he had that? Where did that emanate from? I want to get the writer on this.
It came from New York. It came from himself. He said, I want to be the best wide receiver in the National Football League. That's his own lofty expectations. I get it. Here's the thing. If you want to be the best wide receiver in the National Football League, you would have showed more than Robbie showed last year, even with a rookie quarterback. You look at some of the guys around the National Football League, like DeAndre Hopkins, A.J. Green, Julio Jones, Keenan Allen, certainly those guys.
I don't even think he's a legit number one receiver.
He wants to be better. He has a lot of room to improve, no question about it. Certainly a second year under the belt of Sam Darnold throwing him the football. I just don't think he's good enough, because he would have been better last year and put up better numbers. Now, he had 50-some catches, had like 700-and-some yards, but he doesn't have it in him to be the best receiver in the National Football League.
Do you know what I think of when I see him?
So it's false.
I'd say false too. When I see him, I think at his best, he's a very good number two, kind of like a Peerless Price type when he was here with like Molds. He could be a very good number two.
Right.
He's not a one. Not in my eyes.
Right. He's like the guy that was here in Buffalo and now is with the LA Rams, Robert Woods. Robert Woods. He's a gritty player, kind of a gotcha guy, kind of a try-hard guy, a guy who's going to give
you everything.
He has
a block like Robert Woods does.
I think Robert Woods is better. Yeah. I'll tell you that right now. And Robert Woods is the number one on the Rams right. offense. But he's a gritty, hard-nosed player who gives you the best effort all the time and plays hurt, does all that nitty-gritty stuff. I don't know if Robbie Anderson is at that level even. So I think he's got a long way to go. Certainly it's nice to hear him say, I want to be the best wide receiver in the National Football League. I don't think he can make it. I don't think he's got the physical ability or the skill set to do it, and I don't think he's sitting in the right. I certainly don't think he's sitting in the right team to get that done. So I don't know.
I concur 100%.
That's NFL True False, brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. When we come back to finish up the final segment of the show, we're going to do what did we learn? We had NFL writer Frank Schwab on, who's with Yahoo Sports. He had some things to say about the National Football League. And we also have what do we learn? And we also have a time maybe to take one more call if we can squeeze it in. This is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. What do we learn? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Frank Schwab on from Yahoo Sports, and we talked about all the good things that have happened to the Buffalo Bills this offseason, the good decisions, the discipline, the free agent signings, the draft. But he said it still comes down to Josh Allen as to how far the Bills will go.
But I think the rest is coming together pretty well. I think that defense could be really nasty. I mean, they have added some dudes on that defense. They could be really good on that side of the ball. And you know, I don't love the pieces around Josh Allen, but they've obviously improved there. They had a great offseason. I think Bills fans should be very excited about their offseason, but yet this is a quarterback-driven league, and I don't know where to fall on Josh Allen right now. I really don't. Like, I even talk to people who I trust, who I respect, and it's still kind of the same, like, I just don't know where to fall on him. I mean, if he can put it all together, he has such ability, amazing ability. I mean, you'd build that guy in the lab if you're building a quarterback. But accuracy usually doesn't improve in the NFL. I know Matthew Stafford's a rare exception for that. Maybe Josh Allen is a Matthew Stafford, where the mechanics get better, he's playing with better people, better coaches, and he just improves that ball placement like you talked about. But if Josh Allen does take that step, if he is, you know, kind of what I think Sam Darnold might be, what I think everybody thinks Baker Mayfield might be, and just takes that second-year leap, the Bills might be really, really good because there's a lot of interesting pieces around him.
That from Frank Schwab, writer at Yahoo Sports. He's been there since 2012. We had him on the show at about 1 o'clock today, and he had some good things to say about the Bills and their offseason. Brian, thanks for being on the show. I mean, Tyler Dunn is going to come in and co-host tomorrow. You're going to take the day, but I appreciate you coming
back
and hanging
with me. I'm back at the end of the week.
I was horrible today, man, trying to get it off the air in the breaks and getting out smooth and silky. Like,
hey, people think it's easy.
It's harder than I'm making. It's easier than I'm making it look. Anyway, I don't know
It's not easily.
I was horrible today. I couldn't get us into commercial and out of commercial. I was terrible. No, what was I doing? I don't know.
You'll be all right.
All right. Well, I appreciate you hanging in there with me, by the way. And also, one more thing we wanted to say. We've been talking about it all day, the return of the Blue and Red. You can get tickets to that Friday, August 2nd at 6:15 here at New Era Field. It's going to be a big-time practice and training camp. Going to be one of those things where you get a chance to come down close in a casual atmosphere and watch the players. There are five locations you can get a code and go to BuffaloBills.com for more information on how to get your mobile tickets to go see the return of the Blue and Red coming up on August 2nd. We're doing that. You're gonna be back on Thursday, Friday, though, with me,
yep,
right? Correct?
Yep. I will be back at the end of the week.
Yeah, and we apologize for not getting to more callers today because, you know, like I said, I was struggling today.
Who was your ultimate pick, though? For our poll, like, what is your
team? I think
team?
It's the Jets. I think it's the
Jets. For you, it's the Jets.
The Jets. What team was going to be?
There are a few teams that are better at screwing it up.
I know. Yeah. I'm going with percentages, you know, and I think they've done it more times than anybody else. Well, who'd you pick?
I'm going to go with Cleveland. I just think there's too many fuses there to be lit. And I think that the combination of the challenging personalities with a first-year head coach, that's the combination that just says giant volcano just spewing lava and ash everywhere along Lake Erie.
See, I don't know. I think it's more of a Jet thing. Because, and we're talking about our Twitter poll, which NFL team has the best chance to be a powder keg in 2019? Browns, Jets, Raiders, or other? And you're saying the Browns for all those reasons. I think it's the Jets because here's the thing. No question there are fuses everywhere that can be lit. And same thing with the Raiders, with Vontaze Burfict and Richie Incognito, John Gruden, Antonio Brown. You got all that stuff going on, plus the expectations with the Raiders and their fans and the fact they're leaving that city. But the Jets, to me, here's why. With the Jets, you've got the same kind of fuses, mostly on the coaching staff, or with Le'Veon Bell and mm-hmm. how that goes down. But I think the thing about the Jets that gets me, it's always in New York, there's a lot of fuses on every team that can be lit. But in New York, there's always somebody willing to light it. You know,
like you're saying, there's a media leak somewhere.
There's a media person there that's always got a blowtorch ready to light the fuse, and I think that's hard to avoid. And like we said, obviously none of this is going to blow up in anybody's face until something goes wrong. But in the NFL season, something always goes wrong.
Right, and it's the character of the people you have on the roster and how they handle that. And I don't have any faith that Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be able to handle something that doesn't fit his model of what he should be in the Cleveland offense. And, hey, maybe it goes swimmingly for 7-8 weeks, and they're winning games. But what happens when they lose a couple in a row or, you know, drop yet another game to the hated Pittsburgh Steelers and, you know what I mean? Like, and something doesn't go right, and then it persists for 2 games or 3 games, or they're not scoring points.
And it doesn't go away. I mean, it's 16 weeks. It's a grind.
Yeah.
And it starts in the preseason.
I just have no faith that OBJ is going to be able to hold his tongue.
All right. So tomorrow's show, thank you again, Brownie. Tomorrow's show, we're going to have Tyler Dunn as a co-host. He was here with us yesterday. He's going to be back tomorrow. We're also going to have Daniel Jeremiah coming on tomorrow. And also, a former teammate of mine is going to be in studio with us. Henry Jones is in town. Former safety of the Buffalo Bills first-round draft pick. Also like to thank production assistants George Bloss, Jeff Koltenak, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, James Roble, and, of course, Jay Harris as well. We'll be back with you tomorrow. I promise I'll do better. This has been One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow. And this has been Buffalo Bills Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.